Right, thank you for that, Andy. We've got a final speaker, Shazia Rashid. She'll be talking about how the rhetoric used in the war on terror has led to an understanding that the war was founded on ensuring and safeguarding human rights. The reality on the ground, however, appears to be very different and leads to questioning the real motives on the war on terror. Shazia will explore how human rights have been used as a smokescreen in waging the war.
Good evening, everyone, and Assalamu alaikum. As we've seen today, many vivid examples have been painted and even shown about the human rights abuses that have taken place as a result of the war on terror. So as Nadia explained, I won't be exploring this fact today, but I will be looking at what were the real reasons and motives behind the war on terror. If we look, we were promised rule of law, justice, equality, you know, such words were used. But as we've seen, the reality on the ground is very, very different. There has been no justice, equality, freedom as a result of this war on terror. If anything, there has been human rights abuses. There has been torture, injustice. So if we look, a closest inspection reveals that there are more reasons behind this war. A close inspection reveals that human rights has been used as an excuse to hide the real political reasons behind this war on terror. Previously, wars have constantly been created and shown by Mark Curtis in his book, Unpeople, where he describes unpeople are a group of people who don't mean anything. They have no political significance. He shows how Britain's human rights abuses, Britain has taken part in so many human rights abuses, and he cites case after case where, under the guise of human rights, millions of people, thousands have been killed. But today, I'm going to look at the invasion of Iraq, the war on terror, and how people have been killed, have been tortured under this excuse of human rights. So, if we look at the rhetoric used, first we were told it was about weapons of mass destruction. By linking Iraq with Al-Qaeda, Iraq was presented as this terrorist place that needs to be attacked. But if we look, there were no weapons of mass destruction, and there was no Al-Qaeda found there. But there was definitely, you know, 650,000 people have been murdered, killed as a result. So where are the human rights? If we look further, we were told that Iraq, it was about removing a dictator. It was about ensuring freedom, justice, and the rule of law. Okay, they definitely removed the dictator. You know, Saddam was removed, but it is a well-known fact that under the regime of Saddam, less people died than they have under the regime of America. As well, if the real reason was to remove a dictator, then America would remove the likes of Islam Karimov, who is known to participate in human rights abuses. Human Rights Watch have documented that he has taken place in he has actually boiled people alive. He has imprisoned 60-year-olds for being political activists. So he is a dictator, but America don't want to remove him. Instead, they give him golden handshakes of money. You know, reports have shown that they've given him millions because he allows them to place the airbase within their country. So we see that there are contradictions going on. On one hand, we are told that the war was perpetrated to remove a dictator, but on the other hand, dictators are being held up. So this shows that It wasn't really to remove a dictator. It wasn't really to ensure human rights, restore human rights. But the real reason was something else. And as many people have stated, and as a lot of the literature out there states, one of the reasons for the war on terror was oil. If we look at Lutz Cleveland's book called The New Great Game, Blood and Oil in Central Asia, he shows how within the Middle East, we all know there's plenty of oil in the Middle East, but recently within the Caspian Sea, there's been new oil found. America, at the moment, although it constitutes 4% of the world's population, it consumes a quarter of the world's energy resources, and its energy resources are running out very quickly. They need oil. And one of the reasons, one of the main reasons of this war on terror was to get that oil. By using the rhetoric surrounding the war on terror, they presented it as, you know, we're going to war to restore human rights, to ensure human rights, but the real reason was oil. He shows how even before 9/11, a report stating officials such as Colin Powell and Dick Cheney, they made the following statements. The president should make energy security a priority, and for this, Saddam needs to be removed. So the USA had already planned to remove Saddam even before 9/11 took place. Even before the attacks happened, they had already planned to remove this dictator. But 9/11 was just an opportunity to paint Iraq in this way, or another opportunity alongside this war on terror to gain political interest, to increase the economic interests. So this shows that human rights is used as an excuse. It is used as an excuse to further their political interests. One of the other reasons why this war on terror has been waged and human rights has been used as an excuse is to stop the rise of political Islam. If we look, political Islam is seen as a threat within the Western world. Political Islam has been seen as a threat within the Western world ever since its destruction. A lot of people within the Muslim lands now are calling for an alternative system. They see what democracy, what this idea of freedom, capitalism has not bought, and they are exploring alternatives. If we look at this threat, how the Western world perceives political Islam as a threat, it has been perceived since 1924, since the destruction of political Islam. The comments made by Lord Curzon, the former British Secretary, he said in 1924, "The situation now is that Turkey is dead and will never rise again because we have destroyed its moral strength, the Caliphate and Islam." And he warned that the chapter of Islamic rule is not completely closed when he stated, "We must put an end to anything which brings about any unity between the sons of the Muslims." So we see that these comments, and there are many comments like this, where officials have stated, and this was in 1924, they have stated that they do not want political Islam to rise again. But if we look at the reality on the ground, there are more calls for political Islam. Therefore, if we look at the rhetoric again, which has been used alongside this war on terror, it has been used in a way to create ideas about political Islam that it's a threat, it's terror, it's violent, it's backwards, it's barbaric. An image has been created that it is a threat to human rights. So once again, the card of human rights has been played to stop any call, to stop any discussion of the rise of political Islam within the Muslim lands. It is true that political Islam has a history of 1400 years, and the Western commentators who make such comments are aware of this, And recently we see that even the likes of Bush, Blair and Charles Clark, former secretary, they've made comments such as the return of the Caliphate is non-negotiable. Now, if the war on terror was not to prevent the return of Islam, why would they use such terminology? Why would they present Islam as something which cannot come back, something which cannot return? And the question is, why is it that they see it as a threat? Why is it that they are painting it as a negative image? As I said before, Islam does have almost 14 years of history. If we look at the Islamic civilization from the year 600 to the 1900s, it had a social order which brought cohesion to society. It actually brought peace and tranquility to society. Even if we look at many English historians have stated how political Islam, it brought justice. So many Christians even, they converted to Islam, not because they were forced to, but because they saw the beauty of it. They saw how it brought social order, how it brought progression and prosperity to society. So if we look, as I've stated, you know, they are aware of this fact, they are aware of what political Islam brought to society. In the same way, they are aware that the call for political Islam is rising. If we look, more and more votes are going to Islamic political parties, and polls, surveys have even shown that more Muslims want political Islam as a political structure within the Muslim lands. The Centre for Strategic Studies in the University of Jordan and the University of Maryland have shown this. They've actually carried out comprehensive surveys of the key Middle Eastern countries and shown that 70% of the people within these countries want Sharia to be implemented wholly within their legal framework, and the rest of the 30% want it to be partly implemented. But now, if we look at these statistics, these statistics are true, these statistics have been documented, but how I've stated, the rhetoric used alongside the war on terror has created this image of political Islam which is inhumane, which is, you know, dangerous for women, dangerous for non-Muslims. It is something which, you know, cannot even be thought about. It is something where even if we look, you know, it's just a danger to humanity. It's like Mosen was saying before, in the way Muslims, you know, a lot of Muslims have been arrested and now they've been presented as alien, in the same way Islam, political Islam, as a political entity has been presented as alien. But if we explore some of the laws, and just looking even at the laws of wars, we see that, you know, we have seen today that many human rights abuses have taken place within the laws of, you know, the British laws that have, British laws, American laws. Laws have been changed, people have been abused, tortured. But if we look at the laws of wars within Islam, we see that Islam does not allow women, children, or the elderly, or civilians to be killed. How many civilians, women, children, and the elderly have been killed within this war on terror? Even if we look, there's narrations which say that do not even harm a tree. All wars should be fought on the battleground. There's narrations which show that the prisoner should be fed before you feed yourself. And that is the reality of Islam. That is how prisoners would be treated. And if we look to history, if we look to the history that a lot of historians have documented, they show how these laws were not just laws, but people did abide by them, not how we see today. So if we look at the history of Salah al-Din Ayyubi, who, when he opened up the land of Palestine from the Crusaders, we see narrations which say, in comparison to the First Crusade, when blood flowed abundantly from the slaughtered bodies of the slain inhabitants, the invasion by Salahuddin was bloodless. There's narrations which show that the Christians fought alongside the Muslims. The Christians and Jews, they fought alongside the Muslims to stop this war of the Crusaders. The narrations show that Salahuddin, he not only created this, you know, he not only opened up the lands of Palestine without creating any bloodshed, but he also, the way he treated his prisoners has been unprecedented. He took them in when other Christian kings actually took away all their possessions. These Christians who went to another nearby country, the king actually looted them. And these people, they came back to Salahuddin, who then fed them, clothed them. If we look at other comments made by historians, the likes of Stanley Lane Poole, one of the comments he made was, if taking of Jerusalem was the only known fact about Saladin, it was enough to prove him the most chivalrous and great conqueror of his own and perhaps of any age. So we see history is testament to the fact that political Islam is not the demon and the alien that in the way it is presented. And therefore, now if these people within the Muslim lands, if they are calling for political Islam as a political entity, they should be allowed to. They should be allowed to have that freedom to choose how they want to live their life. And rules and laws should not be imposed on them in the guise of restoring human rights. And, you know, that is what is happening today. Human rights is being used as a way to wage this war on the people who don't want these people to help them. You know, if you look, the occupation has, the amount of death and destruction that has taken place and is ever rising is a result of the occupation, is a result of these people who say, we are there to save you, but all they do is destroy the people. So just to finish off, I'd just like to say that if we look, this war on terror, it hasn't been initiated to restore human rights. Far from it. It's actually destroyed human rights. And if we look, there are reasons. You know, there are reasons behind this, that it's not about human rights. It is about political interests. The political interests of oil, the political interests of stopping any other form of ideology, alternative system from arising. Because if an alternative system were to arise, this would be a direct threat to Western motives. You know, if those lands became independent, if those people became independent, if those people were now able to use their resources and actually build the countries, it would no longer fill the pockets of the West and it would no longer fill the pockets of their allies. And that is one of the reasons why they demonize it in this way. That is one of the reasons why they present it in such an alien and inhumane manner. But we see that history shows that it is very different. This picture that is painted is untrue. And that's why, to finish off, I would like to say that it's very important we all open up our minds and we don't just read what is presented to us, or we don't just look at what the normal average TV channels show us, but we use the resources we have. If we look today, we have the internet. At the press of the button, we can get so much information, and it's up to us to explore that information. It's up to us to find out the real truth, to look to the real history, and not just listen to the rhetoric that is used by the politicians or by certain media influentials, but to really explore things for ourselves, because that is what is going to really bring about human rights for all, when people can choose the way they want to live. Thank you.